Good afternoon, Juno. In about 20 seconds, it'll be 3 o'clock, and we have a wind warning out that we need to kind of take advantage of here. They're saying that it could go to 70-mile-an-hour gusts out near the end of Douglas and through downtown Juno on Saturday. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we want to make sure the hatches are battened down. Got a great show for you today on Juno Afternoon. Three folks here from the University of Alaska Southeast will be talking about the UAS's recent adventures in Cuba. Vinny Latta and Nathan Vollier will be here. They'll highlight Sunday's Cultural Dance Fest. Break of Reality will show up. They're doing a concert Monday at Centennial Hall. And Rena Sims will drop by to update us on the St. Vincent de Paul Thanksgiving Basket Program. All of that today on Juno Afternoon. Stay tuned.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Ottawa was the scene of an unusual ceremony this week. Canada's Governor General and the Prime Minister were on hand for the presentation of medals and a banner to First Nations and Métis communities linked to the War of 1812. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Many historians believe that without the help of First Nations warriors 200 years ago, the regular British troops and Canadian militia would not have been able to stop the American invasion of what is today Canada. The ceremony is part of the Canadian government's commemorations over the next couple of years for the War of 1812. Prime Minister Stephen Harper honored the successor communities to those who helped in the fight for Canada by awarding them a commemorative War of 1812 banner and medal.
They are bestowed today as symbols of an unbreakable bond forged in a common struggle. The war we commemorate today and the part in it played by Aboriginal Canadians did more than preserve a boundary. It also established a national consciousness that defines us to this day.
In total, 48 First Nations and Métis communities with a heritage linked to the War of 1812 were honored. Harper also mentioned the many chiefs and tribes involved in the three-year struggle. The Shawnee under Tecumseh were instrumental in the fight. The Iroquois, the Ojibwe, Odawa, and others who fought at the Battle of the Thames. Algonquin, Mohawk, and Huron warriors at the Battle of Chateauguay. And native leaders such as Oshawana, John Norton, and John Brant. Harper said First Nations and Métis warriors were present at almost every major engagement during the war. And he said beyond that, they served and continue to serve as members of the Canadian Armed Forces and have always been considered important national assets. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
As the East Coast braces for Hurricane Sandy, the United South and Eastern Tribes, or USET, says Sandy may threaten tribal communities. USET says six tribes could feel the impacts in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New York. And depending on the storm's path and strength, tribes in Maine may be hit as well. The organization is working with FEMA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the Indian Health Service to make preparations for response and recovery. Tribes in the potential impact area are encouraged to contact USET. Forecasters say Sandy is going to be a large storm. Native people have mixed feelings about the first Native American Catholic saint. Kateri Tekakwitha was officially deemed a saint by the Pope in Rome Sunday. And as Brian Bull reports, one Native woman hopes the event will help resolve hard feelings.
Blessed Kateri was of Algonquin and Mohawk heritage, and after a grueling life, died in 1680 near present-day Montreal. She's been associated with several miracles since, including helping a Washington State boy recover from a flesh-eating disease. The youth was also of Lummi descent. Among those cheering on Kateri's ascension into sainthood is Avis Hudson Burnett, a Sioux Navajo woman living in the Cleveland area. She acknowledges that there are hard feelings between the Native community, Christianity, and the government over past wars and conflicts. But Hudson Burnett feels this event will help everyone move on.
I sure hope that our American Indian people, obviously I'm sure they'll take it as an honor. Our traditionalists too, I can't speak for them obviously, but I hope they do the same. This is the time for us to have the ultimate forgiveness as to what the government did to us. That's very important, because that's the only way we can heal.
Hudson Burnett keeps a portrait of St. Kateri by her bedside and says she follows her traditional teachings as well as that of the Episcopalian faith. The role of Christianity in converting, and some say subjugating, Native Americans through the centuries remains a touchy issue to this day. Some see the canonization of Kateri as an effort to appeal to more indigenous people. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Cleveland.
During this month in 1913, Benny Benson was born. At the age of 13, the Aleut boy designed the flag of Alaska. He won a contest with his design, which depicts the Big Dipper and the North Star. 8 stars of gold on a field of blue. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
5.5 minutes after 3, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore today hosting Juneau Afternoon. I have 3 folks here in the studio who have just returned recently returned to Juneau from Cuba. Dr. Kevin Meyer from the English department up there is here, Alex Botello and Megan Nye. Hi, folks.
Hi there.
Hello. Hi,
are you going to say hello in Spanish or Cuban?
We could say hola.
Yeah, I guess so. So, Kevin, what started this strange adventure?
Yeah. Well,
is it? I don't know. Can I characterize it as that?
You certainly can.
Is there a natural tie between Juneau and Cuba?
Yeah. The strange adventure was sort of hatched as a plan. Well, you know, to be totally honest, to get me to Cuba, I'm a Hemingway scholar, and I've long been interested in visiting some of the places where Hemingway lived for the last part of his life. But also a plan to get our students abroad without the kind of auspices of various entities that do this, right, the international student exchange things, but to actually get them in the field with our own faculty members. So I was one of 4 faculty members who went to Cuba last spring for 2 months, and we sort of cycled in. But we got together, and it took us about a year and a half to put together a plan of how we could make this happen, and a lot of paperwork and a lot of logistics planning, but it worked.
So, Megan, how was it that you got on the trip?
Well, I only knew one of the professors, and that was Claudia Wakefield. I was taking Spanish with her, and she told me that they kind of had this Cuba semester in the works and that I should apply for it. And I jumped at that opportunity, of course. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
And she told me about it sometime during the dark winter months.
Yes.
Cuba, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that. Alex, how come you?
I don't know. Cuba's been something that I've been intrigued with for a while for multiple reasons, but I have a pretty big interest in cars, and so having the opportunity to be kind of transported back in time and look at all these old 1940, 1950 American muscle cars was a huge appeal, but also, I don't know, I kind of had this image of what Cuba would look like, just sunny weather, people dancing in the street. So I figured why not jump at the opportunity to go hang out, smoke cigars, and just kind of see this island paradise.
So was it all you expected?
There's something that, yeah.
That's good. We'll just close it off now.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's things that were very much like what I kind of imagined, but there's also like huge differences. I don't know, like I imagine this maybe kind of this really happy utopia, which might have been sort of naive, but certain aspects of it where it's just like music, very vibrant kind of city life. And you could find that in certain areas, in certain parts of like Havana. But then also like there's kind of the reality that Havana is kind of a dirty city. I mean, there's just trash. There's kind of this disregard, not necessarily because of disinterest or because they just throw trash, not caring about it, but that's just kind of the only option. There's not, I feel like I only saw maybe 1 garbage truck the entire time that we were in Havana, and we spent probably 2 weeks there over the course of our entire trip. And yeah, I saw 1 garbage truck. Which just sort of gives you this picture of the infrastructure there. And so garbage was just kind of all over this city that But yeah, the people were very friendly, very vibrant. So yeah, it was an interesting and eye-opening experience.
Megan, was that your experience too?
Yeah, I mean, fairly similar. But I was really interested in the history, and I felt like we really got to learn a lot about that and talk to the people and learn about their perspective on Cuba and the Cuban Revolution. And we got to go to the Museo de Revolucion, and that was really exciting. So I learned a lot about things that I was interested in.
Were you surprised?
I was. There were a lot of things and facts and details that were interesting. I was reading a lot of books while I was there too, that helped me get a good insight into what had been going on in the past.
So Kevin, you took 10 students down and 4 faculty members.
12 students.
12.
Yeah,
12.
And each faculty member, the students were there from February 1st until April 1st, which is the amount of time the Cuban government allows these study abroad programs to be in country. And the faculty members came in for 3 weeks and taught a class. So Claudia Wakefield, whom Megan mentioned, taught a class in Spanish, on Spanish language. Dan Monteith taught a class in anthropology. Forrest Wagner, our director of outdoor studies, taught a class on tourism and sort of place-based education. And I taught a class on Hemingway. So
how did this? What did this do to your academic progress? You were down there for like 3 months. Does that put you behind a semester or...?
Well, it would put me behind if I had a plan. so, no, I feel like that, I mean, I don't feel like it set me behind. It was definitely like a unique opportunity. If I was going for a degree in the humanities, I feel like this would, like, even maybe, like, I don't know, progress me further. But I think I'm going into construction engineering. Which isn't offered here at UAS. I got my associate's last semester in construction technology. But I want to get a 4-year degree, and I want to do it in construction technology. So I think I'm going to be going down south this next year. But, yeah, UAS has awesome opportunities like this one that happen from time to time, and felt I should take the advantage.
Megan, how about you? Did it?
It actually fit perfectly for me. I mean, I'm not that far along. It was only my third semester of school, and so I'm working on an English degree anyway. So it fit perfectly in with my degree.
Alex said something about the uniqueness of programs at UAS. Is that because of the size of the school, or why are we able to do that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if I were at I did my graduate work at the University of Oregon, and I happened to know some people in anthropology because my wife was in anthropology, but I wouldn't have known the Spanish faculty. I wouldn't have known anybody in outdoor studies at the University of Oregon. But here, my office is right next door to anthropology on one side, sociology on the other, right? I mean, there's this conversation that happens across disciplines that I think is exactly a function of the size.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So are there other plans for similar adventures brewing anywhere in the system that you know about?
I don't think there are any this year. UAS has done trips like this in the past. They typically happen over winter break. So this was a unique in terms of it being a full semester, in terms of it being a 15-credit, you know, a complete program. This is the first time we've ever done anything like this. I do know that the outdoor studies program, for instance, Forrest Wagner is taking a group of outdoor studies students to climb 4 6,000-meter volcanoes in Ecuador over the Christmas break. Different type of trip, but, you know, a couple UAS faculty members, a dozen or so UAS students traveling abroad. So it's not that out of the ordinary, but the length of it made it unique, I think.
Did you get enough material for your book on Hemingway?
Yeah, I know. I'm actually writing an article about the experience now, so
cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get to hear, as a community, we get to hear from you all tonight?
That's correct.
And what time? Where?
It's at 7 p.m. in the Egan Lecture Hall.
Okay.
And we won't actually hear from Alex and Megan. They'll be in the audience, but I'm going to introduce the 4 other students who are on the trip, and they're going to offer sort of a unique, or they're going to talk about what was unique about the program.
So you'll be cheering and clapping and stomping and supporting your
people. All
precisely.
Of that.
Okay, so 7 o'clock tonight, Egan Lecture Hall. Hear about the UAS adventures in Cuba. Thanks, folks.
Thanks, yes, Pat.
Thank you.
Hope to see you there.
Mama, yo quiero saber de dónde son los cantantes.
Cuban music there, and we've got a group coming talk to us. So we're in Cuba in February, March, and April. 12 students from the University of Alaska Southeast with 4 faculty. That's tonight's evening at Egan. However, there's also another cultural-based event coming up, and that'll be on Sunday. Vinny Latta is here to tell us about the Cultural Dance Fest.
Yes.
What's up?
How you doing, Mr. Patrick?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Yeah, so it'll be this Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Juno Arts Culture Center. We've got several different groups who are signed up to perform. A new group that I've never heard of, they're called Spirit Lodge, and it's a native dance group from the Lower 48. And we also have Yisku'u, which is an Alaska Native dance group, Daughters of the Blue Moon, the belly dancers. They're always fun to watch. And we also...
I got quite a lecture when they had they brought a lady up from New York, and she, I said something about belly dancing, and she said, Oriental dance, please.
So, oh, really?
There you go. So it's Oriental dance.
Oriental
there
dance.
There you go.
Yeah, so we also have the Janice Holst dancers from the Janice Holst Dance Company, and a Polynesian dancer. Yet to be announced.
Yet to be announced. Okay. Yeah. So how does this work as far as the... the programming goes? I mean, if you once you're there and you're seated, what are you doing, a round table kind of thing? Or
Yeah, the venue would be seated in a round, and the performance would be like towards the middle back.
Okay.
And so the audience is free to come and go as they please. And, you know, they won't distract the performance at all.
So each group will come out and dance, and then is there like a break? Or
Yeah, there's about a five-minute break in between each group. Each group is given about half an hour to do their performance. They'll talk a little bit about the dance and the movements and the culture, where the movements come from, a little bit of history. And, you know, basically the event is to expose the community to other cultures. And this is part of the Juno Human Rights Commission.
Uh-huh.
Our series called I Am Juno, we've been doing it now for 3 years. We've host potlucks and dance events such as this one, a speaker series that we've done over the last couple of years. This year we focused on social issues like domestic violence and, you know, things like that. So it's going to be really, really fun to move away from all the, you know, drama, sad stuff, and have some fun and dance. Yeah.
And realize that now these groups, there's a group from outside, but most of the groups that you're describing are part of our local culture here.
Yes, these are all local dancers. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see it.
Again and again and again on the show, we talked with folks from Perseverance Theater and just finished talking to some students that went to Cuba from UAS. I'm continually amazed as I host this program how many people are involved in how many great cultural and artistic activities out of Juno. We seem to be I don't know, there's something about the community that says we can, and so we just do it, you know.
Yeah, you know what I would like to see, though, is I would like to see some of these subgroups organize. And, for example, the Latino community. You know, I would like to see the Latino community organize as such as the Filipinos have.
Uh-huh.
And create a group with bylaws and whatnot where they can find representation, not just within government, but, you know, in public.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to see more of that. The Polynesians are starting to do it because there's now a big group of Samoans, Tongans, you know.
Where's your home?
I was born in Tonga, Nuku'alofa. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So came here when I was 5, been in Juno now for a little over 12 years. This is home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Work here, sleep and play.
How about the Human Rights Commission? What attracted you into that?
You know, what really attracted me to the Human Rights Commission was, well, because I grew up in L.A., and L.A. was so multicultural. You know, you didn't really see color. You just saw people. And then when I went to undergrad in Georgia, everything was a color. You were either brown, white, or black. And so when I came to Juno, I didn't really see that same kind of mentality. But in the subculture, in the institutions, you can definitely see and feel the discrimination, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, in the workplace, and you know, even when you're in restaurants, you go in a restaurant and people don't sit together, you know.
Yeah. Schools, I think.
Schools, yeah.
It's also, yeah.
And like in Hawaii, because I spent a lot of time in Hawaii, Juno is very similar. You have your native culture, you have your white culture, you have native rights, you know, then you have your constitutionalists, and there's always seems to be that struggle between the two.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Human Rights Commission given me a way to help the community, you know, look at one another with a non-judgmental eye, and, you know, just look at people for who they are.
Yeah.
People who bleed and feel and cry and laugh.
And a great way to do that is through the arts and culture, because that's it's neutral enough and yet distinctive enough that you find out something about the other folks.
For sure.
So once again, the groups that will be performing, this is on Sunday at 1 o'clock.
Yep, 1 to 4, be there.
And who's going to be on again?
1 o'clock we have Spirit Lodge.
Okay, that's the outside group coming up from where?
Well, they're a group from Juneau.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
their dance movements are of the lower 48 Indian tribes.
Okay, I didn't understand. Okay, and then
1:30 we have the Polynesian dancers. I believe her name is Nini Toitu'u.
Uh-huh.
2:00 we've got Yis Ku'u. 2:30 Juneau City of Juneau Highland Dancers. 3:00 is the Daughters of the New Moon. 3:30 Janice Host Dancers. And 4:00, there's gonna be a special tribute to Eric McDowell.
Oh,
do you remember Eric?
Yeah.
He just passed away. Yeah.
Yeah,
so Eric was one of the founders of Folk Fest.
Yeah,
and so there'll be a special tribute to him by Greg McLaughlin and Liz Saya and some of their friends.
Wonderful. Okay, great event coming up Sunday at the Jack. Tickets on sale.
It's free.
It's free.
Best part of all.
Best part of all. A free event at the Jack starting 1:00 on Sunday. Come watch the dance and attend the tribute to Eric McDowell.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 26th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of Scott Russell Sanders, born Memphis, 1945. Went off to college to study physics, but once he got there, he started reading Virginia Woolf and Faulkner and James Joyce and decided that literature had the answer to the questions that interested him. He moved to Indiana with his wife, and he writes about life in the Midwest, the woods and hills of Indiana. He said, "I feel at home in this sprawling, low-lying, often neglected heartland." Scott Russell Sanders has written 20 books, novels, essays, short stories. His books include A Private History of Awe and A Conservationist Manifesto. His advice for young writers was keep a journal, not a diary, unless you want to keep a record of your daily doings, but a journal, a place where you record images, ideas, favorite passages from your reading, insights, overheard bits of conversation, drafts, and random notes. The journal is your practice room and root cellar. And it's the birthday of the early self-help writer Napoleon Hill, born in a one-room cabin in Wise County, Virginia, in 1883. He was a reporter, and when he was in his mid-20s, he was assigned to interview Andrew Carnegie, who had grown up poor in Scotland, worked his way up in the American steel industry, became one of the richest men in the world. Carnegie told Hill that in his opinion there was a formula for success and anyone could achieve it, and he told the young man he ought to consider writing a book about the idea. So he went around interviewing hundreds of successful people, and in 1937 he published his book Think and Grow Rich. It was enormously successful, and it still is. It has sold more than 70 million copies. Book in which he wrote, "Do not wait, the time will never be just right. Start where you stand and work whatever tools you may have at your command, and better tools will be found as you go along." Here's a poem for today by Ronald Wallace entitled "The Truth" for Amy. Her breast cancer, she said, had metastasized to her liver. She was going to die, and soon. She said it made her sad. I didn't know her well. We were co-workers, and I liked her. But what do you say when someone actually answers the question, "How are you?" with the unvarnished truth? "Not well," she said. "I haven't long to live." And should I have said, "Oh, you will"? Should I have smoothed it over with the syrup of nervousness, or done what I did, which was to talk about terror and anger, the unfairness and the lie, to take the truth at face value? No, she was just sad, she said. She had her faith, she said, and started to cry. And only then did I see what she needed from me, was miracle, a simple belief in miracle. And if that was varnish, well, it would bring the grain of the truth out, would save it from wear and weather. It would make the truth almost shine. The Truth, a poem by Ronald Wallace from Long for This World, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Betsy Allister, edited by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 3:30, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We have a high wind warning out for Juneau. They're saying that around 10 p.m. tonight, we should start seeing some very high winds through Douglas and Juneau, 60 to 70 mile per hour gusts. And basically, the Weather Service is saying that we're urged to secure any loose objects that could be blown around or damaged by the wind. And if you must venture outdoors, stay alert for flying debris and doors slamming shut. And folks who have vessels in Douglas and Harris harbors need to make sure that they are properly moored. The high wind warning continues through the weekend. Looks like by Sunday it's supposed to have died off pretty well. Saturday night should be the last major gusts around 70 miles per hour. So high wind warning in effect for Juneau. And here is a little preview of something that's coming to Juneau right away. The music in the background is a group called Break of Reality. They'll be playing here in Juneau on Monday night at Centennial Hall, and Ivan Provino is joining us on my telephone. Hi, Ivan.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. Nice cello work in the background there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm actually the drummer for the band, so I can't take credit for that.
So you can't take credit for the cellos, huh?
That's right.
How serious is the break with reality?
Well, Break of Reality has been a band for 9 years. It started at the Eastman School of Music, which is a classical music conservatory. It has a pretty big classical focus, but the members of our band, like other kinds of music too, are big fans of rock, and we try to bring those elements into our classical training.
So what's the instrumentation?
It's three cellos and percussion. I typically play an African hand drum, and also play drum set for some of our louder, more rock-inspired tunes.
So how does I'm envisioning now the situation of a cello or of cellos and drums playing the whole thing. How do you the sound is wonderful, but it's amazing to me that you get all of that out of that instrumentation.
Yeah, well, I think
was this
nice
like an adventure?
Absolutely, and I think what's nice about the cello is that it's a very versatile instrument. And like I was saying, we're really inspired by rock music. So what we've done is try to figure out how to make our instruments sound like rock guitar, or do extended techniques that bring it out of a classical kind of sound, and just add a little bit of variety to what we do. We don't have a vocalist, so I think our music tends to speak to a lot of different people in a lot of different ways, and I think that's a good thing for us. We don't have a specific message that we're pushing out to people. They can kind of take what they want from each tune.
How did the group come together?
Well, in college, we started to play together just for fun. We just started playing local coffee houses and started covering bands like Metallica. And it was really just an outlet for us to get out of the classical kind of mindset that was surrounded, you know, that we were surrounded by in college. And we just started growing from there. We started building a small fan base, and it started turning into something. And 9 years later, we're still traveling the country and playing concerts and loving it.
Where was the college?
It was in Rochester, New York. It's called Eastman School of Music.
Okay. So here's this coffee house, and you guys are set up, and there's the cellos up on the stage and the drum set, and people walk in and they see this. How did the audience react the first time this occurred?
Well, I think they really enjoyed it. I think there's always an element of the unexpected at our concerts. Like, you know, you see three classical instruments. You're expecting a certain kind of sound, and you really get the complete opposite. So I think people are really taken by that. So I think the response has always been a positive one. And our sound has also changed over the years. You know, I think we really started out playing a ton of cover songs, by bands that we really liked. But now we write a lot of original music, and that's a big part, of our set. Will be a big part of our set in Juneau.
What kinds of songs, have you been writing as far as?
Well, we tend to write tunes in a rock style a lot of times. People sometimes describe them as cinematic. They're sometimes used in television shows. I think Dateline NBC recently featured a little clip of our music. It's described as cinematic and pretty heavy, to be honest. I mean, our guys really play with a lot of energy. There's bow hairs going everywhere. I think it's just we take a lot of elements from a rock concert and try to apply them to our concerts. So, for example, our guys don't use music stands or sheet music. They memorize all of our music. There's elements of improvisation. There's a lot of communication going on stage, and I think with the audience as well. So if I had to categorize our sound, I would definitely say that it's more of a rock sound than anything else.
Ivan, I have Vintage up here. Can we listen to a little of that and then talk to you in a second about what that consists of?
Absolutely.
Here we go. Definitely see what you mean about a cinematic tone to that. You could almost see that behind a chase scene, couldn't you? Or not a chase scene, I guess, so much as maybe a long pan shot with a sports car going through the Austrian hills or something. Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a lot of imagery that our music creates.
Yeah.
And as you can tell, you know, it's the way the guys are playing. It's very, very aggressive, and it definitely has a different bite than a normal, you know, a classical cellist would play with.
Yeah, I could definitely see the bows flying that you were talking about while I was listening to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you play in Juneau, then are you moving on through Alaska, or are you back to the lower 48? What's next on your schedule after here?
Well, we played Phoenix last night. We had a great show in Phoenix, and we're driving to L.A. right now. We'll be flying. We're taking a couple days off and then flying into Alaska. We're playing Juneau, and then we're in Anchorage. And then our Alaska time is done after that.
So how long are you? How much are you on the road a year?
I would say we're probably on the road maybe a couple weeks out of every couple of months. So we probably have about 15 or 16 big concerts that we play. And then in addition to those, we do a lot of educational outreach where we travel to public schools and we play for music students and try to inspire them to think outside of the box with their instruments. So
are you doing
a school concert?
Are you doing a school concert here?
We're doing some educational work as well. Absolutely. I think we have some educational presentations lined up with some of the presenters that are bringing us in. So we're really looking forward to that. Working with students is a big part of what we do, and we kind of feel like it's our duty as musicians to go out and to play for these kids and teach them a little bit about what we do.
Yeah. Well, the group really sounds exciting. The concert for the public, not the ones that are in the school, but the concert is Monday night. It's at Centennial Hall. Tickets are on sale throughout the Juneau area right now, and we hope to welcome you to beautiful downtown Juneau, and these winds that we're experiencing right now should die away by the time you get here Sunday night and like that. So the last of it's supposed to die away then. So Ivan, looking forward to the group. Let's go out with a little bit of The Accident, shall we?
Okay, sounds great.
Here it comes. four cellos and drums, music of Break with Reality. They're coming to Juno Sunday night. There are Monday night at Centennial Hall. They'll be playing a little bit in the schools for educational purposes and like that. So tickets are on sale around town for Break of Reality. The Weather Bureau just reissued the latest forecast as of, well, they're saying as of 4 p.m. It's not quite that. It's 15 till, but they're a little bit ahead of their clock anyway. So they say tonight, mostly clear, becoming locally very windy. The lows around 24, those will range to 16 in wind-sheltered valleys. Northeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour, but near downtown Juneau and Douglas, those northeast winds 15 miles per hour will increase to 30 with gusts to 60 miles per hour late tonight. Saturday, we're talking about sunny, highs around 37, northeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Near downtown Juneau and Douglas, northeast winds 35 miles per hour with frequent gusts up to 50 and isolated gusts up to 70 miles per hour. Saturday night, partly cloudy, windy, lows near 30. Those will range to 20 in wind-sheltered valleys. Southeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Near downtown Juneau and Douglas, northeast winds will be at 35 miles per hour with frequent gusts to 50 and isolated gusts to 70 miles per hour. Sunday, partly cloudy and windy. Highs around 31, highs near 38 near downtown Juneau and Douglas. Southeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Near downtown Juneau and Douglas, the northeast winds 35 miles per hour with gusts up to 50 and isolated gusts to 70 miles per hour on Sunday. Those will diminish late in the afternoon, and Sunday night's forecast is just for partly cloudy. Monday through Tuesday, partly cloudy. Highs in the 30s, 20s to 30s. And then Tuesday night, we start to get the chance of rain or snow. The lows down around 34, and Wednesday mostly cloudy with chance of rain. Wednesday night, Thursday night, cloudy, chance of rain and snow. So the big winds are tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday. Batten down the hatches, Juno. We all know what those 70-mile-per-hour gusts can bring flying through the air at us. It's about 12 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. My next guest is here to tell us about the St. Vincent de Paul Thanksgiving Basket Program. Paula Sumdum, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. I want to say good afternoon, Juno. My name is Paula, and my co-host of this event is Rena Sims. Unfortunately, she couldn't be here today, but we would like to once again thank Juno for their generous donations to the Thanksgiving baskets. But we particularly want to thank Jeff and KTOO because they've been so gracious to us over the years. It's time again to reach out to the community for donations. We will accept cash or any item to be included in the baskets, such as potatoes, olives, fruit cocktail, Jell-O, canned veggies, Dream Whip, biscuit mixes, margarine or butter, gravy mixes, stuffing, turkeys, hams, or anything else that you would enjoy at your Christmas, at your Thanksgiving table. In the past, some families have even included some bagged candy or soda so that the younger members of the receiving families could also have a special treat. We will be taking names for the food baskets on November 1st through November 9th. Please come by the administrative offices of St. Vincent de Paul at 8617 Teal Street. The phone number for St. Vincent de Paul is 789-5535. For those wishing to donate, please call St. Vincent's at 789-5535, or you can fax us information or ask questions at 789-2557. The baskets will be distributed on Sunday the 19th and Monday the 20th. If you need further assistance, you can also call Rena Sims after November 1st at 209-9993. And once again, Juno, thank you. Last year, your donations allowed us to feed over 400 families, and we really appreciate it. We do work with agencies such as Catholic Community Services, Family and Youth Service, or Office of Children's Services, Hope Cottage, Reach, Mountain View Senior Citizen Center. So if you know of anybody that needs a basket also, please feel free to call us and we'll be sure. And we do have some folks that are gracious enough that they'll deliver it to people that can't get there.
Paula, how does all this stuff get stuffed into the baskets?
Well, I have foster kids, and so does Rena. And then also the kids that have community work service that they need to do. We all gather on Friday and Saturday to gather all of the food, and then we create the baskets. And then we have pizza.
You got enough crew, or do you need other people?
If somebody would like to show up, they're certainly welcome, or they can call Rena at 209-9993. Or if you have a group that would like to help us, we could always use help, even if it's just to help people get their food out to the cars. Last year we had a group that came by, and they helped deliver them. And also they would sit in the cars with the younger ones because parents didn't want to have to unpack all the, you know, four kids and come in and get the basket and try to get everything back. Mm-hmm. And so we have a group of really great teenagers in this town, and they all helped out a lot.
How about the drivers? Do you still need anyone volunteer to
absolutely
deliver?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we're spread out here. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds funny if you come from the lower 48, but it is, you know, to go clear out the road or clear out to Thane or to Douglas, it can be time-consuming. So if somebody would like to do that, we would certainly accept your help.
Are there any, does anybody have to have any kind of special license or anything like that?
Not to my knowledge,
okay,
because just, these are all volunteers.
Yeah, okay. So if folks want to help out, they can call Rena. If they want to deliver, they can get on a list with Rena as well. So she's
absolutely
basically the contact
and,
person.
Martha is the lady to talk to at St. Vincent de Paul. She's our Wonder Woman, takes care of everything, so we appreciate her a lot.
Okay, good.
And we thank Dan Austin, who is the general manager of St. Vincent's, for his willingness to let us do this every year.
Outstanding. Well, it's a great program. So if people, let's take this list one more time here. If you want to be on the list to receive a basket, you need to call, is it 789-5535?
Yes,
is that right?
Sir.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or go by 8617 Teal Street, and that's St. Vincent de Paul. And it's over actually in the Smith Hall, which is the taller of the buildings. And ask to speak to Martha about a Thanksgiving basket, and she'll get you signed up.
Martha will put you on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know of someone that should probably may need a basket and may not want to call themselves, you can give their name to Rena at 209-9993 or Martha at St. Vincent de Paul.
Good. Yes. Uh-huh.
And the baskets will be distributed on the 19th and 20th.
Yes.
All of the donations need to be at wherever they're going to be by what date?
What we traditionally do is have everything go to St. Vincent de Paul. The food will be distributed from Riverbend Community Center, which is directly behind the post office in the Mendenhall Valley.
Okay.
And so then we move all the food over there, you know, sort it out, and then we build the baskets.
Okay.
And if somebody has a special food need, I mean, if there's an elder out there that can't have a certain kind of food, if they'll let us know, we'll try our best. I can't guarantee anything, but we would like everyone to have a happy holiday.
What a wonderful work. Thank you so much, Paula, for telling us about this. Thanks so much for all of the work
well,
that
thanks,
you put
Juno,
into this
because
each year.
This is the 10th year we've done it, and they've been great.
Cool.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
16-year-old Mitchell Doherty and his family live in Sterling. A while back, Mitchell went with his grandmother to a Kenai Peninsula Borough community meeting. The topic of the day was to discuss local area priorities. Mitchell says going to that meeting made an impact on him. He remembers a lot of discussion, even more disagreement, and a number of misunderstandings between the adults gathered there. He left the meeting with an idea. He'd start a new local publication that would help all these different people and groups know about each other and what was going on in the region. That's how the Sterling newspaper got its start. First step, get the scoop.
I emailed them for information about what's going on throughout the month, and they just send it to me, and I compile it, and then I send it back to each group.
Cool. Do you end up printing it yourself, or is it all done electronically?
It's all just done electronically.
Who do you give it to? How does it get out to people?
I send it to, like, leaders of churches and everyone else, and they print it off and they distribute it to families and people who use their facilities.
Mitchell says he thinks about 200 people end up seeing the newsletter in some form, either on a screen or in print. Mitchell established relationships with area schools, nonprofit organizations, churches, and other agencies to find out what's happening around Sterling and the surrounding area. He says he'll keep publishing the Sterling newspaper at least until he's finished with high school.
I'd like to see everybody get along and don't like arguing, I guess.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
And my final guest today is Jeff Brown. Hi, Jeff.
Dad, thanks for having me in on the show today.
Yeah.
You've been doing a good job.
So what's up?
Tomorrow is the annual, semi-annual used record CDs and video sale downstairs at the KTUO conference room. We've been getting a lot of donations, and also we've been culling a lot of our classical music library, so on the LPs. So if you're a fan of classical music, we've got some great deals for you. Some records and VHS tapes, not just a dollar, it's five for a dollar. CDs and DVDs are at $1 each, and everything else is free. We have some operas on cassette. So 9 a.m. till noon, no early birds.
Okay. So what time, again, do they need to show up if they want to browse this stuff?
9 o'clock, no early birds.
Okay.
I'm very tough on that, Pat.
Okay. I can tell you're vicious.
Listen up, Juno. This is Seaweed J. Stubbs, and I'm here to tell you about the biggest, baddest, boldest musical that has ever come to this town. I'm talking about Hairspray, courtesy of Juno Lyric Opera and Juno Douglas High. We're going to be getting our groove on at the JHS Auditorium the weekends of November 2nd and 9th. Hairspray tickets are on sale online at junoopera.org or just drop on by the Jack, Hearthside, or Rainy Retreat Books. I'm telling you better be there for Hairspray opening Friday, November 2nd. So run and tell that!
Katie Bowsler's the host on Monday. She's got a good lineup of guests. Chris Taylor's coming in from Canvas. Elva Bontrager will be here telling us about Gold Street Music this coming Saturday. Next Saturday, not tomorrow. We'll find about next Tuesday, there's a presentation on Approaching to Challenging Behaviors. Amber Smith will be here from Alzheimer's Resources. And Glacier Gardens will have a story on their upside-down trees. You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you can tune K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, KTOO is on K210 AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. You can hear KRNN on digital channel 872, and KXLL is on 873. And we also stream continuously on www.ktoo.org.
Here at Juno's public radio stations, millions of electrons get excited every day, bringing you news, information, music, and more. We've even got a box to help us out. It's called an exciter. It works on radio waves, but not on people. We rely on our programming to do that. If you're excited enough about public radio to support it with your financial contribution, especially right now during our choir drive, you can pledge online by heading to ktoo.org. Excitement. It's contagious.
Once again, big wind warning out for Juno tonight, Saturday night, and Sunday night. So watch out for those 70-mile-per-hour winds, Juno. This is Pat Moore, been your host today for Juno Afternoon.